As I was mentioning to Sandra, this is a conference that I look forward to so much every year, primarily because of the real Christian atmosphere and the encouragement, and also the really good seminars, not mine particularly, but the others, where I really get a boost in the arm and real encouragement and new ideas or affirmation that I'm doing it well. So as I begin, I just want to open up with prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, I come before you through the Lord Jesus Christ, and I thank you that you love us as we are. I thank you that you see all our giftings and our limitations within ourselves and our circumstances, and that you see the heart, our intent to bless our children and prepare them for work in your kingdom. And so, Father, today I would continue to ask favor over our endeavors, that you would bless us with the ability to really attain the goals that you have placed in our hearts for your glory. In Jesus' name, amen. So it's been really interesting listening to Catherine Levinson, because a lot of this seminar sort of dovetails with what she has said, but it takes a more specific and different look at things. So the short story genre are living books. They do fall under that category, but it is a specific genre which we're going to talk about as we go on. Stories have always been a part of my growing up. I had a maternal grandfather who loved to tell stories and would keep us spellbound. I had parents that also told stories at night to get us to go to sleep, or to keep us going when we were hiking, or to help us wait if we were in a lineup somewhere. So stories have always been a part of my life. But as I look back, they were primarily for entertainment. And, you know, sometimes a little moral thrown in, but vastly for entertainment. And then as I got into the homeschooling, learning all about that, I discovered or rediscovered the power of story to grasp a new concept. And many of you are going to be familiar with that, that for many children, if you put a new concept in a story form, they just grab it and they can run with it. And some programs that use it are like Matthew C. Anybody who's used that will never forget the little story about Place Value Street and how that really helps them grasp that concept. And then you've got lots of other curriculums, history books that use the story form to really bring it all together, and curriculums such as Five in a Row. And they're harnessing the learning through story in a specific way. But it wasn't until this past fall, when I took a university literature course, that the short story as a specific genre really crystallized for me about what a powerful educational tool it was. And I got really excited about sharing it at the convention this year, and so I was really delighted that the committee accepted it. So, the short story is a very simple, unassuming prose. And so, because of that, it's often overlooked, because it's too simple and it's too easy. But I really believe that it can be a key ingredient in helping us reach one of our top educational goals or top life goals for our children. As I've been homeschooling, I've regularly asked myself, why am I doing this? What is my goal? What am I trying to attain at the end of the day? And after passing on my faith or encouraging my children in their faith, the second most important aspect was that they would be discerning adults, that they would be critical thinkers, that they would be able to look at something and see it for what it really is. So that they could recognize what's true and what's false, what's destructive and what's profitable, and all that sort of thing, because we all know that we can't walk our children through every possible scenario, every possible conflict, impossible. So all we can hope to do is give them the tools to be successful when you release them into adult life. And so along the way, I didn't discover the short story for a long time, but I used curriculum, logic, critical thinking, analytical skills. There's a lot of that out there. It's excellent. It's fabulous. It will really develop certain abilities. but it's not quite as comprehensive as the short story, which will help the child grow in discernment, which I think is so important, with effectively and more profoundly. And so it's unassuming and it's very simple, but it's incredibly powerful. And this has really been driven home to me this last year, as my husband and I have found ourselves really embroiled in a lot of discernment within our church, as we see beliefs, theology coming in that is not orthodox, that really causes us grave concern, and trying to be discerning and realizing how important it is to ask probing questions, to think for yourself, to base what you believe on the Word of God. And so the importance of discernment really has been driven home for us this last year. Just as a side note, I used to think in the end times that the spirit of deception would be outside the church, keeping non-believers from believing the truth. I now am strongly beginning to wonder whether that spirit of deception is going to be within the church. And that's just a really frightening and distressing thing. But we are not going to fearmonger here. We are going to catch a hold of something that we can do to prepare and equip our children. So, simplest learning tool with the greatest impact that I have come across. And so please don't discount it because it's so easy, because it's so accessible. There's a lot to it. So looking forward to sharing with you what I've learned. So I'm going to start off by defining it by what it is not. All right. Now, storytelling has been around forever. Before there was even writing, there was storytelling. But as a specific genre, it came into being in the early 1900s. And that aside, a short story is not a tale. A tale tells you about strange, wonderful events in bare summary, and the point is the revelation of the marvelous. Okay, so think of Aladdin, you know, and that sort of thing. That's a tale. That's not what we're talking about. It's also not a fable. A fable usually has an unrealistic plot, the characters are often animals, and it ends with a stated moral. And you know, there are places for tales and there's places for fables, but that is not the short story genre. Then there's also parables, and you know, parables are powerful ways to teach spiritual truths, but they're restricted to the familiar, and that's also not what a short story is. So if you look online to the dictionary, free online dictionary there, their definition is a short piece of prose fiction having few characters and aiming at unity of effect. And that is a key thing. The short story is written in its entirety with one purpose. They go on to describe it concentrates on a single theme, and when it first came out in the early 1900s, it was about 10,000 words. Now with our inability to pay attention quite as long, it's sometimes as short as 5,000 words, but it's a short story. Merriam-Webster adds to that by saying it concentrates on the creation of mood rather than plot. So a short story is looking to move you emotionally, because if you'll be moved emotionally, then you will think about the issue for which the author wrote the story. Now, Edgar Allan Poe, many of you are probably familiar with him. He was sort of the father of this genre, and he had six descriptions of what a short story should be. So it needs to be complete in itself. You need to be able to read it in one sitting. Have every word used for important effect. Have a good opening sentence that is developed throughout the work and at its climax, and have no more characters than those necessary for action. So that was Edgar Allan Poe's description of what a short story is. A more colorful description is by William Trevor, who's the author of short stories, and he has a very short, simple phrase. A short story is an explosion of truth. The short story is not to entertain. The short story is to move you and to have you think. Another way to get at the essence of the story is through Gregory Maguire's description. He says, a short story is, in some ways, like a photograph. a captured moment of time that is crystalline, though sometimes mysterious, arresting, though perhaps delicate. But while a photo may or may not suggest consequences, a short story always does. In the story's moment of time, something important, something irrevocable has occurred. The change may be subtle or obvious, but it is definite and it is definitive. So you're beginning to get the idea that a short story not only wants to move you emotionally, but is going to challenge you to think about the message that the author has. So, as mentioned before, the author has a very specific purpose, and they are going to convey it through showing rather than telling. So in a short story, you will never have an explicit statement of what they're trying to get you to think about. It'll always be implicit. So it's, the theme is woven in. So one of the keys to really walking away enriched from a short story is addressing the theme or discovering it. So, now why is the short story such an educationally marvelous tool? What gives it such a powerful advantage? Well, the definition has already hinted at it, and it lies in the purpose and the structure. Human beings have always loved stories. I mean, I don't know, it's because we're curious, right? We want to get into other people's lives. I don't know if women are more like that than men, but, you know, love to walk through somebody else's house or hear about their life. And this interest, this inborn natural curiosity draws us in and it captures our attention. And I think there's something we all know as homeschooling parents, that if you don't have the student's attention, you might as well call it a day and go home. There's not much that can be done without their attention. It's a key ingredient to learning. The story, as I mentioned before, is written to move you emotionally, and that prompts engagement. It's all of a sudden not an absolute fact out there. It's something that is affecting me. And so this personalizing prompts engagement. The author carefully chooses words and details to evoke vivid mental images. And as Catherine mentioned previously, that whenever, for those of us who think in pictures, whenever we have pictures that we associate with facts, the recall is amazing. Right? So that's another huge benefit to the short story. As I was researching for this, I came across information on stories as memory enhancers. And that's why a lot of different curriculums will use story forms. And the one site, mindtools.com, talks about this exactly the same thing. The images are vivid and then they're easy to recall. And so that's why if you put something in story form, it usually sticks with you for a very long time and it's easier to process because that's the way our brain is wired. It's not something you have to try to create. It's not a skill that you have to give your children. The brain is just wired that way. It's also used in study methods, like the PEG memory method, where you know they connect characters and to different facts, and then they construct a story. So it's used in a lot of different ways. Other ways that it's a powerful educational tool is that the content is significant. Like I said, it's not there to entertain. So they want to challenge values or beliefs or the status quo, and ideas have consequences. If you've done any worldview stuff, you know that all ideas have consequences. And so this really prompts a lot of thinking too. It helps us to explore challenging issues at an arm's length. Often when we feel like preached at in a sermon, or if somebody's right in our face and you know trying to debate something with us, it's uncomfortable, right? And we become defensive and we back up. But if we can look at an issue in a story form, then it's a safer way to think through it and to process it. So that's another huge advantage. It also helps us to understand our own and other lives, which is a big benefit. The power of the short story is, of course, in its theme. And at the back of your handout, I think near the back, near the bottom, I have e-reading PowerPoint presentation. And if you go to that website, they have a marvelous PowerPoint presentation of what is the theme and how to find a theme that you could use. Well, you could read it, look at it for yourself, or use with any age of child, and it will really help in discovering the themes in the short stories so that you really know what you're looking for. So, the short story is all this condensed in a small package, and because you read it in one sitting, there's nothing that distracts. You know, you've got the message really beaming in on you. Other impressions don't creep in. The website, thelearningcoach.com, why you need to use short storytelling for learning, says stories are the emotional glue that connects the audience to the message. You know that. People want to know about origins. Stories reshape knowledge into something meaningful. Stories make people care. Stories are motivating. And stories give meaning to data. So if you go out and research it, you'll find over and over again these same themes about the benefit of short stories. So what with it grabbing our attention and engaging us emotionally and enabling us to recall it, the short story is a marvelous educational tool because it provokes reflective and evaluative thought, and it provides a springboard for discussion. And all of this supports growing in discernment. And it's very, very important that even at a young age, and I know that many of you have kids in elementary school, that we start encouraging them and making space for thinking through things, even at a very young level. Now, I really like the Charlotte Mason method. I fell in love with it years ago when I came across it. I used it with my children, and so it's been really neat to be here and hear Catherine Levinson. What I haven't figured out is there are aspects to education I don't know how they fit into that method. And one of them is the analytical, critical sort of discernment piece of it. If your child is reading and narrating back all the time, just retelling the story, yes, absolute way of hanging on to what you've learned. But that completely leaves out going deeper into the story. I had wanted to talk to Catherine to see how she sort of adds that in or how she juggles it, but she's been busy, so I haven't had a chance. So this is going to add on to that. So with the short story genre, I would never ask a child to narrate back because it's not for them to remember the story. There is something else that we're wanting to do with the short story. So I just wanted to point that out. All right, let's go on to the practical aspect of it, which is sourcing. And if you look at the back of your handout, I've noted several excellent websites that I've come across where you can find stories online, if that's an easy way for you to do it. As I've thought about short stories, I've broken them down into three general categories as far as age goes. So the first one is kindergarten to grade 5, the elementary school, then middle school, grade 6 to grade 8, and high school, grade 9 to grade 12. And I've done that because usually the students in those various categories need something different. You're all walking towards greater discernment, but it's a different focus with each group. So with the elementary grade kids, they're a part in life where they're connecting the dots. How do these facts fit into my life, into any sort of a context? And so the focus is a little bit different. You're not going to have quite the same penetrating questions that you would ask at the high school level. But they're still trying to make sense of life and think things through. Grades 6 to 8, the middle school. The best resource that I found for this age group are these two books. The Book of Virtues and The Moral Compass. And I'll tell you why. This age group, they're going through puberty, their hormones are going wild. Doing a lot with them educationally is quite challenging. And you know, you want to set them up for success. Now, they're way past the picture book stage. But they need to, you need to keep carrying them along. And so they need stories that have an implicit moral, which they can sort of discuss a little bit. Because often at that stage they're getting into discussing. Okay? And these, and there's no anthologies that I could find that had short stories for this genre. So these are two easy books to use because they categorize them into units, and that makes it sometimes a lot simpler in picking out a story. So in the moral compass, you know, they've got the sections of home and hearth, into the world, standing fast, easing the path, citizenship and leadership. So the stories fall under those sort of headings. I would suggest that for middle school students, you pick the stories at the end of each section because they're the longer ones, they're the more complex ones. There's poems in here, there's short little essays, there's paragraphs, but you want the short stories at the end of each section. So these are going to be stories that will help that age to think about things, but it's still in a gentle way. It's not as complex as you get in the high school years. The Book of Virtues has sections such as self-discipline, compassion, courage, honesty, and that sort of thing. So the one thing I would not do with your middle-aged students is to tell them which section you picked the story from, because you don't want to give them a heads up on the theme. They need to discover it for themselves. So this is the best I could come up with for that age group, because they need to focus on subjects other than themselves. That's the key at that age, you know. Do not worry about the blemishes on your face, right? Or that Susie walked past you in the hallway and didn't talk to you. But, I mean, do we remember that drama? Would any of us go back? No, but you have to ease them through it. And so stories that will help them focus on something other than themselves is what you're looking for. Grades 9 to 12, high school, best place to get these stories are online. I could not find any anthology of short stories. They may be out there, but I could not find them. So the internet is the easiest way to really get a hold of them. Now at this age, and I don't know, does anybody have children in the high school years yet? Yes, some of you do. Okay, higher. Okay. This is where it gets really interesting, because this is where you're really trying to get the discernment crystallizing and becoming personalized for them in discussing the themes, in discussing consequences, in discussing perspective, all that sort of thing. So that they will start to discern, there are many ways of doing life and they all have different outcomes, so that they'll discern that depending on what you build your life on is often what you end up with at the end. So many different things to discern, and much more comfortable to do it through a short story than, you know, have to experience absolutely everything out there, right? So that's my best suggestion for online. Okay, I think that's all on sourcing. By the way, for the elementary grades, I just walked into the library and I thought, okay, I mean, I haven't had students in elementary school for a long time. So I thought, well, how hard would this be? So I just walked in and I grabbed some books. And if you want to come up and take a look later, I've written down the different areas in life that they'll talk about, and also the vocabulary that's in there. So in a short story, you're looking for really challenging, interesting, vibrant vocab, okay? And that's part of a whole book. Now, not everything in the library is going to be great, for sure. I hope nobody here likes Robert Munsch, because I have an issue with Robert Munsch. And maybe someday I'll do a talk on why not Robert Munsch. But that might, I don't know. So, yes, you'll need to go to the library, go to your own shelf, and see what works for your children. The one thing that I forgot to mention is that we can divide all of life into about 10 areas, okay? And it's not that we need to put life into boxes, but it helps us in finding themes. It helps us in sort of understanding what part we're looking at. And if you look at your handout, I've made a list of them, and theology, biology, the whole list of all the different broad categories. You'll recognize that the colleges and the universities have developed their departments and their faculties under those areas. And if you've ever done any worldview stuff, it addresses those 10 areas, because of course God has spoken into each one of those areas and has spoken truth into them. And I just list them for you so that as you're looking at books and looking at themes, you'll have an idea of which part of life this is talking about. And it will help. I would never mention the category to an elementary school kid. It doesn't matter, right? It'll just confuse them. They don't need to know. Middle school, if your child's there, I would mention it. For sure, when you're discussing different issues for the high school, I would start to talk about it. So that as they're in, let's say, ethics class, or depending on where they are at college or university, they can begin to hone in as to where people are coming from and what they're actually saying. So I think the next thing we're going to talk about is preparation. My first suggestion, well, you have to choose a story, obviously. I would suggest that you try not to pick a story which will address something in your student's life that you want to change. You know? Because they'll see through it, and because it will take you too long to find this story. It's better just to find a good story and go with whatever the theme is. I personally, as a second step, would pre-read the story. But I like to be in control, and I know there's a lot of you out there who are more spontaneous, creative, like to go with, you know, what's new and happening, and that would just be boring to you to have to pre-read the story. So, you know, if you love to live dangerously, I release you to not read the story, but please do not email me and tell me that you ended up someplace you really didn't want to go, because authors are as varied as the people, and there's fabulous stuff, and there's stuff that you would not want to read at any age. So that's just a little heads up. So as I pre-read, I look for the theme, so I have an idea of what the author's trying to say and what he's challenging and that sort of thing. And then I decide, depending on the student or the circumstances, what are we going to do with the story? And there's a few things you can do. You can read it and leave it. You don't need to do anything else. A really good story is going to grab your student, and it's going to sit in their mind, and they need to ruminate over it, and they're going to think about it, and it's going to affect them. So it is totally all right, under certain circumstances and with certain students, read it and leave it, right? And that's totally fine. Or you can decide to discuss it. Now, please do not regurgitate the story. That is just so boring. That kills it right there. Don't regurgitate the story. Don't moralize. And I would not have them narrate the story back, because the actual story is going to be so well written, for the most part, that they are going to remember it. That's not the point. The point is, what is the message? And so if you decide to discuss it, I would suggest the Socratic method, Andrew Adams' method, the Socratic method, where you lead the child into further discovery and understanding through other questions. So sometimes it takes a bit of time to figure out what are the best questions, but a resource like Andrew Adams has on his website even probably all the questions to ask in different areas, and that will really help. And if you want to do a unit study out of it, most of these will lend themselves perfectly to a unit study, and you can do all sorts of additional activities or explore things with it. So it's totally where you're at and what your student needs at that time. All right, so some sample lessons and walkthroughs. So I'm going to start with elementary. When I first went to the library, I thought, okay, how hard will it be to find a good book? This was the first book that was on the shelf, so I thought, well, why not, right? And I have fallen in love with it. I wish I had children or grandchildren to read this story to. It's so marvelous. A House for Hermit Crab. And I have never got hung up with using picture books for older elementary kids, 3, 4, 5. I don't have a problem with it, because a well-written story is going to have good vocab, and they're going to take something else out of it. And for quite a few years there in the elementary school years, they're still benefited by the pictures, right? And even today with high school, if we're doing something new in history or science or whatever, machines, I will first go to the children's section and I will find the best book with pictures, even grade 9, 10, and then they get a quick summary and overview, visually and otherwise, of the topic, and then we go further in depth. So, A House for Hermit Crab. This story, generally, the synopsis of it is that it follows a hermit crab's journey through 12 months of needing a bigger home. Because, you know, as they get too big, they have to get out of their little shell and they need to find something bigger. And so he finds one, and he's making it own by decorating it. Some of the vocab in this book is grazed, murmured, darting, approached, cheered, prickly, gingerly. So you can see that for this type of story, it's advanced vocab. And as Catherine said, don't worry about it. They'll begin to understand just by the context of it. And, you know, as they hear it in stories, they'll get the idea of what it means. Now, the reason why I love this book so much is because it's rich with educational opportunities. It follows through 12 months, so you could do, you know, the calendar year as far as learning the seasons. And this dear little hermit crab, now the pictures are quite simple. This is Eric Carle's style, very simplistic, but very friendly, you know, and introducing all these different marine animals. I mean, if you wanted to do a unit study on marine animals, this would be a lovely introduction to it. And this little hermit crab, after he's found a shell, wanders around the ocean floor, and he's finding things to decorate his shell with. And he, when he encounters a new species that he thinks would be helpful for his little house, he has a very respectful way of asking. Okay, so I'm just going to read you this one short little section to give you a little idea. In June, Hermit Crab came to a group of snails crawling over a rock on the ocean floor. They grazed as they went, picking up algae and bits of debris and leaving a neat path behind them. "How tidy and hard-working you are," said Hermit Crab. "Would you be willing to come and help clean my house?" "I would," offered one of the snails. Happily, Hermit Crab picked it up with his claw and placed it on his shell. And so throughout this whole book, he meets all these different creatures, and he respectfully asks, would they like to be part of his, I guess, decorating project? And it smacks so much of good manners, good interaction. And at this age, the discernment part comes with modeling the best behavior, right? Modeling issues in a gentle way. And so I just totally love this book. But there are also different aspects to life that you can pull out of it if you want to do discussion on it. So in the areas of psychology, it talks about personal and basic needs. Under sociology, it's the benefit of community. Ethics, the right way to appropriate what you need. Economics, ownership and recycling. Biology, marine life. So you can see that with such a simple book, it is like a gold mine of helping the student at this age connect the dots, give context, good modeling to what they're learning. If you want to do further discussion, you could look at what makes change difficult. How to respect and sharing make the world a better place. And as I said before, you could study a lot of marine animals. So this one short little story is just a treasure trove of educational opportunities. All right, middle school. So from this book, I chose A Worn Path by Eudora Welty. And the synopsis is, an old, partially blind woman goes on a challenging journey into town to pick up medicine for her sick grandson. Now, most of the story is about the journey of this very old, partly blind woman getting to town. I mean, the obstacles she meets and the difficulties. By the time she gets to town, you are tired. It's just been like, is she going to make it, and how is she going to overcome this? And so the author is very, very skilled in that, and that's exactly what the author wants, for you to feel tired by the time she gets into town. And the theme of this story is sacrifice, which is a very good theme for students in that age group, because it's very foreign to them. Right? So you want them to start thinking about things other than themselves, and that there are other ways of doing life rather than looking in the mirror and going, me, 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 right? So, but this story is so powerfully written that you don't need to moralize. You let them read it and experience it. As the Charlotte Mason approaches, you put the child in connection with the story and let the story work on them, right? So, what else could you do with this? So the theme is sacrifice, but there's many other areas that if you choose to discuss, you could do. Under psychology, what would motivate a handicapped woman to take such a difficult journey? Like, why? History. How does the era in which the story takes place make life more challenging for the woman? And it's after the Civil War, but I don't know how many years after, and it really plays into it. Ethics. How do you think she rationalized keeping the nickel? Sociology. Why did the man point the gun at Granny? Biology. This short story is full of wild animals because she's coming from a rural area, so foxes and jackrabbits and coons and wild hogs and alligators, and it's amazing what this author has all packed in there. So if you've got a boy who likes animals, the fact that Granny's taking a long journey is offset by the fact there's lots of animals that show up. So that sometimes grabs their interest. For further exploration with this story, you could discuss what would motivate you to persevere through major obstacles. And let them really think about what would really get them to keep going and going and going and going. And of course, the woman's motivation is love. But they need to ask themselves that question. What were the pros and cons of the Civil War for blacks? Years ago, I used to think the Civil War was all good and life was great after that was won and the blacks were set free. It's only been the last few years as I was really realizing that that's not the truth, that there are still many, many difficulties and problems for them after that. Another question you could ask for this book is, what type of person uses intimidation? So you can see the questions are getting a little bit more abstract, a little more complex, and those questions, if you decide to discuss it, need to be asked for them to become discerning about their own motivation, about their own perspective, and like I said, I don't know how that fits in with the Charlotte Mason method. Maybe there's an answer to that, but I think it's really important to have them, not that they have to come up with the right answer. You want them to think about it. That's the key. Analyze, evaluate, that sort of thing. All right, last but not least, high school. So, online. Now, this was my textbook for my university course, and one unit was on the short story. And one of the first short stories I had to read was The Lottery by Shirley Jackson. Has anybody ever read it? Oh, too bad. I can't shock you then. Okay, I had never read it. Yes. Well, for those of you who haven't read it, remember that a story, a good short story, is creating a mood, right? I'm going to read you the first paragraph, because it very well describes how the author lulls you into certain expectations. The morning of June 27th was clear and sunny, with the fresh warmth of a full summer day. The flowers were blossoming profusely, and the grass was richly green. The people of the village began to gather in the square between the post office and the bank. Around 10 o'clock, in some towns, there were so many people that the lottery took 2 days and had to be started on June 26th. But in this village, where there were only about 300 people, the whole lottery took less than 2 hours. It could begin at 10 o'clock in the morning and still be through in time to allow villagers to get home for noon dinner. So this is how the story reads out. It starts off, and you're going, great, this is going to be a really lovely story, you know, grandma and apple pie. And most of this story is very detailed about the process of the lottery, how they choose the winner. And they take it very seriously. This is part of a tradition that they have been doing for hundreds and maybe, well, I don't know, thousands, but hundreds of years. And it's this rural setting, farming community, maybe the 1930s, 1920s in rural America. Well, so you're really getting into how they select this person, and you think that some lucky person is going to win groceries for a year, okay? And then very quickly, at the end, the person gets chosen, and the community assembles and stones that person. And you're like, you know, you feel like you've been hoodwinked, set up, you're outraged, you know? And of course, the author has all done this very, very intentionally. And I tried this on my daughter, grade 10. I said, well, I just have a story I want you to read and tell me what you think. And she had exactly the same response as I did. Outrage and horrible and freaky and weird. And so, you know, this author got through emotionally too, which is, of course, the point. When I first read the story, I decided that I didn't like literature, that short stories were horrible and a waste of time, and what was I being sucked into, and I couldn't wait to get through this course. But when the emotions calm down and you start to think, okay, what is the message of this author? Because it's masterfully written. And you realize that the theme is, what they want you to look at is the unchallenged status quo. There are things in your life that have always been there and they're never challenged, never thought through. It can leave huge parts of ignorance into the equation, and you'll have something in your life that is unproductive or destructive. But because it's been in the wallpaper of your life for so long, you don't see it. I mean, these villagers, they just, this is the way it always been. You had to stone somebody once a year so that the crops would be good. And we equate stoning with pagan customs thousands of years ago. We would never equate it to rural, you know, 1930 America. And so because of that shock tactic, it really gets you thinking about traditions, the status quo, and this is exactly what the author wants you to do. So at this level, like I said, they're not entertaining. There's usually a bit of a shock factor like that. They are goading you to think about something significant, and it is not comfortable, okay? So, but it is a huge opportunity to learn and to discuss things. I don't think I'll ever forget this story, but it has changed me. I now look at things differently. And so, just as an example, I was thinking to myself, what in my life or what in my culture is just accepted? That it's just the way it's been, and this is the way we see life. And the one thing that came to me is our definition of a successfully launched child. Now, how would we define that? We would define that basically as independent. They've graduated from high school, they have a job, they're living on their own, they get married, they have kids. And I know that we could all support that expectation quite well. But then I thought, that's our culture. What about other cultures who define a successful adult as one who can harmoniously contribute to a larger extended family living in close proximity? That is a completely different definition of a successfully launched adult. And so over the last few months, I've been thinking this through, right? Now, of course, nothing as dramatic as stoning somebody, but, you know, it's if my expectation of my children being successful is that they're 100% independent and they have the totally own life, and that doesn't happen, then I see them as a failure. I see myself as a failure, when perhaps in a different context and with a different perspective and different set of expectations, it would not be that way at all. So it really encourages and provokes us to evaluate things, and that's the whole point of the story. Now, if you want to explore it further, of course, it's full of stuff. Theology, what do we do to appease fate to the gods or God? Ethics, do we believe in a collective morality, which means what's best for the greatest amount of people, or an individual morality? Each person responsible for an ultimate standard. Under psychology, what need in humanity has given rise to scapegoating? Because that's what this is about. And if you look at it, it's been around for thousands of years. Now, what need in humanity led to that? Be very interesting to look at it. Sociology, when does community become groupthink? And for those of you who haven't encountered that term, it's when you've got a collective amount of people where harmony and agreement is the most important factor. And it completely pushes out thinking outside the box, individual contributions. It's all about agreeing, right? And when you get that in a corporation or in a church committee, then you usually don't come up with any good solutions or innovative things. So when does groupthink play into our lives? Sociology. I would just mention that. Law. How do we determine whether or not a law is right? History. How can we evaluate our traditions in order to ascertain whether they are beneficial or pointless? Okay. So all that to say, short stories can be a really wonderful way to encourage your student to grow in discernment and understanding at the beginning levels how pieces fit together, and then to consider things other than themselves, and then to really get into the deeper issues. And the thing is, you're not going to be able to walk them through every situation, but if they have started, if they've had experience in evaluating, in analyzing, in asking probing questions, they will have more of that mindset. So that when they come across a piece of information that doesn't jive with what they know, or they're uncomfortable in the situation, they'll have that process, and they can fall back on it. And it's a wonderful, wonderful tool. Now, other than discernment, why and when would you use these short stories? Well, if you're exhausted, this is a good time to use it, because you just need to read it to them or give it to them to read. Or sometimes when you're teaching multiple students in a level, each student will take away what they need in that level. And so this is a great time to use a story. Or if your younger child is a strong visual learner, they will get so much out of a picture book. If you're sick and tired of your curriculum, that's a good day to take a break and read a story. Or if you want to do some sort of a unit study. And, or, if your relationship with your child is strained, there are times when we just really all need a break from one another. And so, there's something less in your face about reading a story side by side, or giving an older child the story to read. Because as they get into high school, they need independence. So if you can just assign them a story, you've granted them that independence, right? So, there's a lot of different reasons why you would use it. I wouldn't do this all the time. This is a concentrated, especially as we get into the older years, of learning. And it's rich. And you can't do it too much because it takes time to process it. I mean, I read this story of the lottery in the fall. I'm still thinking it through. Now, I don't have a lot of time to process, so, you know, it's going to take me longer than the average student who, you know, has more time on their hands. Certainly don't need to go that slow, but it's not something you do weekly unless you're going to just read it and leave it. But if it's a really intense story, maybe once a month, right? It's a real enrichment thing. It's not a you do this every day sort of thing. Unless, you know, if you're going to build a unit study around it, that's something a little bit different too. So in conclusion, it's very helpful to ask yourself regularly, what is the primary goal of my homeschooling? What am I trying to attain? What outcome am I looking for? And after passing on our faith, I believe that we need to equip our children to be discerning so that they can make good decisions when they are out on their own and by themselves, so that they will have a life that God can bless. This requires discernment, and in that regard, the short story can be your best friend. So I just really pray that the Lord will bless all of your endeavors with your children. I know there's lots of challenges and there's lots of joys, but I hope that in the year that's left or in the year that's coming that you will have some marvelous adventures with the short story. So that's all I have to share, and I'm wondering if anybody has any questions. I feel I went a little bit quickly, so if you have any questions or anything, if you know how Charlotte Mason's approach works with the Socratic questioning probing method, I'd love to hear it. Maybe I'll still have a chance to ask Catherine about that. Any questions? Yeah?
This is one thing I missed in my Christian education was the synthesis of stories. I could regurgitate answers, but I couldn't analyze it like you're talking. And so we're homeschooling our children and wanting them to read and giving them incentives to regurgitate the stories or explain to us in their words what they got from it.
Right.
So you're saying don't explain it, but go deeper.
Yeah, don't, as Charlotte Mason says, don't get between your child and the story. Get them a good story, leave them with it. But then some students are naturally analytical. They'll take apart pieces and they'll evaluate, and they're just wired that way. But then there's a lot of students who aren't. And the only way to grow them in that process is to ask probing questions. So, and they're evaluative questions. You know, what was the motivation behind that? What do you think the consequences will be to that action? Not to see if they've understood the story, but if they can see underneath the story, right, and analyze it. So, anybody else?
You mentioned, I think it was Adam Andrews.
Did I get that right?
Yes. Yeah, it's Center for Literature. Is that what it's called? Center for Lit. The Socratic, teaching the classics, Socratic method to discussion. And I've also used that for many, many years and found an excellent support in asking really good questions. Because I had a public school education, I just crammed and regurgitated facts, and I really didn't get truly educated until I homeschooled. And so, you know, it's sometimes you need help in what is even a good question, you know? So, yes?
So in going to the library and looking at kids' books, there's obviously so many, so how do you find one that think is going to help your kid in covering appropriate topics or whatever? Like, do you just go and say, okay, I want to teach them about the sea, so I'll pick out a cute book about the sea? Like, how do you choose? Like,
well, I wouldn't try to pick out a book on a certain theme just because it's going to take you a lot of time. I tried to do it that way. As I researched for this presentation, I found it's too cumbersome. And so I'd pray about it first. And there are a few things you can look for. The illustrations in the book, and you can see over there with that selection that there's different types of illustration, but they encourage the imagination, right? And you'll look, if in skimming through a book or reading through a book, look for really strong vocabulary and find a topic that is going to be of interest or is an important part of real life, right? A teddy bear that got lost and finally showed up at the picnic, you know, that's not, it's not quite what you're looking for. So this is actually going to be challenging. So I would first go with authors that you know. Authors that you know are good. Eric Carle has a few good ones. Beatrix Potter. Go with the well-known authors. And, I mean, Bill Peet, he's, you know, you could think that those stories are fluff because they're sort of cartoony and that sort of thing, but they are not. There's always a very important theme that runs in them, and a lot of children respond to his sort of illustrations much better. So I would first go with authors that you know, that you like, And I think that would help. And then ask other moms, you know, do you have a good author and that sort of thing. Because, yes, the libraries are often, unless you're in a very conservative area, are weeding out the really great books, seems to me, and putting things on the shelves that I wouldn't even bother to pick up. You know, so much about dragons, so much about, you know, the mysterious and the occult and that sort of thing. So for the elementary school years, I'd definitely pre-read and go with authors, you know. Yeah.
Lunch is at the lunch, you say?
Absolutely. I do not... I cannot figure out why he's popular, but anyway, he is popular. Poor Robert Munch. I hope he never hears any of these presentations. He'll probably sue me. Yes?
Speak to kids' appreciation of stories versus adults. They sometimes find things funny that you kind of scratch your head and say, that isn't funny. And they understand stories so differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think so
I don't know if I can say much to that, except that their mind is, of course, processing things at a different level. And when we look at a topic, we know this much. And depending on the age of the child, they'll know only this much. So they're focusing on a very small part. It is surprising to me how even with my daughter who's in grade 9, there'll be a movie or a book where I will be weeping through it. And she's like, Mom. You know, she doesn't connect to the personal trauma. She doesn't connect to the bigger picture in history. She's just seeing, you know, one little part of it. And so if they find something really funny, I wouldn't worry about it. It's just something that they're really focusing on. And we may never really understand what they find really amusing. And it's okay.
We had an author come to our camp to speak to kids, and the story kind of just seemed like it had no happy ending, and it had kind of a, you know, not much of a clever storyline, but the kids thought it was funny.
Well,
because if I just talk about real life, it was more of a tragedy than a comedy, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, I have encountered that with my oldest, who's 21, and what he will find funny, I don't know if he has a black sense of humor, but I just find it shocking. And it's like, how can you find that funny? But, you know, that's where he's at, and that's what he thinks is really humorous. So it's sometimes very difficult to understand where they're coming from. Was there a question over here?
I just wanted to thank you. I thought this was so helpful to continue from the sermon.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and even I want to go and read stories right now.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad that it's given you some ideas. Yeah, I love reading stories out loud. And I'm trying to convince my daughter, who's going into grade 11, that she's not too old for us to do a little bit of read out loud, which is going to be a hard sell, but I love it, so.
And we were sort of reading out loud from novels and things, and it's fine, but it gets so long that way, and I thought, oh, this is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Which I should have thought of myself,
there's so much to consolidate and think and process that often it helps if somebody else is a little bit ahead on the journey and, you know, gives you an idea. Any other questions or thoughts? No? Okay, thank you so much for allowing me to share with you. I've really enjoyed it, and all the best with your homeschooling adventures, and enjoy it. I am almost done, and I wish I could do it over again. So, thank you.